My name is Laura Martins. I am a volunteer of the Junior League of Tulsa, Inc. I am conducting this interview this fifth day of October 1979 with Annabelle Monet at her home, exclusively for the Junior League of Tulsa's Historic Preservation Project. Carol Johnson of the Junior League is also conducting this interview with me.
Carol and I are at Annabelle's house down the street.
What names did you have?
Well, you have asked me to give you some resource material, and these are some of the names I have come up with. I think for the Boston Avenue Methodist Church, I know that you've already been to the church and researched their material, but have you been to see Mary Caroline Cullen?
I think someone is going, but let me get it down again. Because I didn't know, for example, that she was a good resource for that church.
She's an excellent resource, and I'll tell you why. Her father was chairman of the building committee that built Boston Avenue Methodist Church.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't think he was an architect. I don't even remember what his business was at this point.
Joe Coberman has a lot of information on that. And so that would be
you
a
could
wonderful
tie-in.
What
they both say.
Well, yes, because he might be wrong on some things, you know.
Well, you really need
two
or three, really three opinions on that.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Caroline was a child at the time. I don't know how young she was. I think maybe a teenager, maybe a little younger. But she sat in on a lot of these conferences that took place. A.M. Robinson would come to their house, and she sat around the dining room table. She first conceived the idea, and I think Mary Caroline said that she drew the idea of the church and the tablecloth.
This is the story that we got from Joe Coberling, and everybody called Ada Robinson Miss Bobby. I was confused about
that. I haven't heard that. She was my art teacher at TU.
Mm-hmm.
And I was extremely fond of her. She's
everybody
a very interesting person, very deep person, someone and very, very private.
Mm-hmm.
You never know the real person. And if anybody knew her, I would say it would have to be Joe Coberling and Caroline Cullen, people that are alive today. And Bruce Goff also was one of her proteges, those three.
Mm-hmm.
And they all became architects. And they were students of hers at Central High School.
She
was
Central
an art teacher that was before she went to Tulsa University and became head of the art department. Mary Caroline, of course, was very disturbed when Bruce Goff said that actually the idea was his. So she can refute all of that. And I think that anybody that knew Dr. Robinson and knew the type of design that she did, and anybody who knows anything about Bruce Goff and his style would have no doubt for what she actually did.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Caroline can tell you tidbits about when the Rose Chapel was to be opened, the carved woodwork, I think, for the top of the chapel was not ready. They had ordered it from someone that was her designer. And I think she took plaster of Paris. Now, this is a story Mary Caroline told me. And with her own hands, she created the molding around the top of the church so that it could be used and could be stained.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would later replace it. And I think Mary Caroline told me that they never did.
They never did. No.
And I have since been in there at Rose Chapel and
you
looked at it.
Tell.
And you can't tell if this is a true story. It does look like it.
No, the church person who was taking us through, the director or something, told us that that was not moved. And I just couldn't believe it. That's right.
And someone else that could have been Elizabeth Carruthers. Elizabeth Rice Carruthers Davis. Her name is Elizabeth Davis. She was an artist. She formerly taught at Elliott. Her father was the minister of the church at the time. There are three figures on the south side of the church, of its south entrance, that have significance. One of them is a circuit rider, and I've forgotten what the other two are. But I think one of them is supposed to be the image of Dr. Rice. I am positive in my own mind that Dr. Robinson designed that whole church, and then it was turned over to an architectural firm for them to do the architectural painting.
This is what Jennifer does.
Yeah, all of this I have heard from Mark Carmichael and from Tom and Chuck. But they both collaborated each other. But anyway, Dr. Robinson's house was built before the church. Have you seen it?
Yes, it is.
I haven't been in it since I was an art student many years ago.
Well, you would probably be surprised at how much is the same and how much is different.
I would like to see it, and in fact, I did intend to go see it, and I just never got over there.
Is Mary Cohen receptive to it?
Yes, she would be very receptive. She would be very pleased to see that kind of recognition that could go to Dr. Robinson and to the church, and of course to her and mother, because she felt that her mother was very much a part of this too. Her mother and Ada Robinson were very, very close friends.
Yes, I think there was a reference.
And Joe Coberling's father, I think, was the contractor for that house.
Yes,
and
because
Joe may have worked on it. I think maybe he and Bruce got both.
Well, but he said that in an interview, he was very frustrated with Bruce Goff because he said something to Bruce about, this is your baby, you're not paying any attention to it, and with that, Bruce Goff walked out. And they had to cut plans and sizes and things because the money was a problem.
Right.
And that the original house was designed with no kitchen. They forgot the kitchen entirely.
And I don't think that would have bothered Ada Robinson.
Oh, well, she said, oh dear, I must have a kitchen. So that they ended up with this tiny little folded type kitchen in the bed. It's really funny. But that's similar to a Frank Lloyd Wright design, because it always looked as if he forgot the kitchens too. And in his bed, there was tiny.
Well, I think she was very much inspired by the work that he did. And she was in the Art Deco period with hers. And, I'm sure that Boston Avenue is not a strict Art Deco type structure, but I certainly think it's been influenced.
It has a lot of it.
And I know that people come from all over the world to see that church.
How do you think I would best get a good general background on Tulsa between 1925 and then the beginning of World War II? Can you think of any person or resource that would be very helpful? I've read the Angela Davis book.
She's still living, by the way. She lives in Marshall, Oklahoma. She came here, and I know she visited with Floy Elliott Cobb, who is still living. Floy Elliott Cobb was my English teacher at Central High School, by the way. And they were very good friends, and one day Mrs. Cobb had Angie DeBow come and speak to us. Well, in high school, we could have cared less. And while she was very interesting as a writer, she was a very dull speaker to teenage people. I can remember thinking, how dull, and I wish now that I had absorbed everything she had to say.
What about then, on the same thing, some people who might tell the best anecdotes and stories about
those days? Well, there I would go back to Ira Cruz. senior. Mm-hmm. I think he would be very good resource material. Rex Evans has always lived here. He knows where everything was. He knows everything about everybody.
Rex Evans, that's a new name. Uh-huh.
I had thought too of Maxine Hall.
Maxine Hall, mm-hmm. I'm sure would be very good. Mm-hmm.
She was quite amusing that day with how much of her was. She was telling us that. Spicy too.
And Frank Galbraith. Mm-hmm. There again, I'm not sure how many years Frank spent in Tulsa at that time, because Frank was in and out of Tulsa.
Yes.
But he has a good recall, too. Mm-hmm. He can tell you. He knows a lot of stories, and he has a cute way of telling them.
Mm-hmm. I've read his book. And I asked Dr. Settle what he thought about that, and everybody says it would probably be good they don't know how well he is.
Right. He is not well. He has myeloma. He has two or three other diseases. And he has his good days and his bad days.
Mm-hmm.
And something about Frank, the more you talk with Frank, the better he feels.
Ah.
I've explained why Fanny's possessive.
I don't know.
Fanny Mish, because Fanny is a writer. She has done a lot of research. She has spent her own money on this research, copying photographs and going places and gathering material. And she wants to use it.
Mm.
And you can understand why.
Mm.
But there again, in just talking with her, she can give you a lot of information. And if you would like to go see her, this is one time when I think that perhaps if I went, it might help her be on.
Okay.
I also believe on Fanny Mish, Susan Henneke, and I interviewed her too. She is definitely one you wouldn't want four or five people, different people calling,
right,
because she really does get confused and concerned about Johnny coming up with it. Preservation,
yes,
area.
And she does not think that they know what they're doing. And you just have to go along with her and say, that's right, and then she'll quote you afterwards saying that.
It's a little tricky.
But
and her pet project, of course, is still the oldest structure in Tulsa.
Uh-huh. And she found it and she's done the research on it. And so she's very interested in that.
But I really do feel that if several people contact her for different interviews, mm-hmm, that she'll become totally uncooperative.
Mm-hmm.
I could be mistaken here. But
yes, I'm almost positive she would be, and she's also very suspicious of what you're doing.
Mm.
She is very suspicious. And
well, then for me to say writing a book would be just the worst thing.
Not necessarily, because if you tell her you're doing it on the Art Deco page, and you want anecdotes, and you know that she was around and that she knew people, I don't think what you're doing will interfere in any way with what she has been doing.
Mm-hmm.
When we interviewed her, we were looking for a picture of the Perriman House, how it used to look, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a picture, and she let us look at it, and she really was very reluctant to let us borrow it, which was understandable. At least we could see.
Well, did you ever get a picture? Because later, I got a picture that was better than hers. I borrowed it and made some copies.
I'm trying to think. I turned all that material over to the last year's research team.
I
also
told someone that
fourth,
we had it.
Yes, the Fourth National Bank also ran a picture in one of their little monthly.
But I had another photograph that someone told me, and I think maybe it was Russell Gideon, I'm not certain, because that was my source, was Russell Gideon. And I think the woman who had given him the photograph, and she is still alive, I can't remember her name, but Russell Gideon, she said that it was an earlier picture of him.
I never saw it. That might have happened last year after.
And there again, Rex Evans remembers that house when it was downtown, and all the flowers that she had around the house. Rachel, fascinating.
That's
she has been interviewed, and there were some articles written earlier in early newspapers, and I had Xerox copies of those in the files at the museum. I'm sure that all this material has been seen by me because I pulled them from there.
What about the race riots that David Green was talking about yesterday? Of course, that's 1921. You're not.
It's wonderful information for me to know because I think everybody should know that it's really before.
Mish talked about that day, and it seems to me, I would have to go back and look at my notes, but it seems to me that she was saying, well, it's not true, everyone's blown it out of proportion, it really wasn't. And I think she's the one who said that. She was trying to tie it down.
Most white people do say that, and that's why I suggested you go to the Red Cross and see their vast, vast material that they have. And Ada Robertson, by the way, was one of the volunteers who helped for months and months and months, and Mrs. Cole also, in the black areas, trying to do what they could do.
Well, I would think if that many square blocks were burned to the ground.
And there are photographs, marvelous.
Yes.
Long photographs.
Yes, I've seen.
Showing them different periods, right after the riot, yeah. 6 months later, 12 months later.
And if they called in the National Guard and everything else,
it was just interesting for me to hear Fannie mention that whole lot.
Yes, and you'll hear this. You'll hear this from most of the men you've interviewed. They probably won't even want to talk about it. I think I may have told you that I met one man who came to the museum who had participated in the riot and still had all the paper left in his system, and it was unbelievable, and I wanted to get an oral history. And so I called Ruth Aber, who was in charge of the oral histories. And before she could get to him, I think he died 5 or 6 days after he was in the museum.
Was he a white man?
No, he was just an ordinary individual.
No, I mean, which side of the race riot was he?
He was a white man.
He was white.
But all the venom and the hatred was still there. And that gave me an insight as to why these people don't. Because it was a terrible, terrible thing. But it has nothing to do with Art Deco.
No.
I don't
no.
think it does. You know.
Annabelle, in talking to people, have you ever talked to anyone about the effects of the Depression on Tulsa? Nobody ever hit on that time period.
Well, I was here.
do you remember?
Oh, yes, I remember. And as I've said before, it's something that people don't talk about. I think people were, well, they couldn't do anything about it. Most people were very proud, and there wasn't any government help to
until
speak
the
up.
Very late 30s.
Right, and you got along as best you could. And some of the people who were very, very prosperous had absolutely nothing. They may have lived in their big homes, but they didn't have money to buy
it
food.
It was keeping up the charade.
I remember I lived at 27 South Knoxville at that time. In a very small house, and we must have been on Elmwood. I think it was an alley, but it wasn't paved or anything. It was just a dirt alley. And our trash man was a man in a big black Packard who came down the alley, and he was dressed in a dark business suit. And you could tell he was not your ordinary trash man. And he picked up the trash and put it in the back of his black Packard, and I remember that he was 25 cents a month, and I suppose he came once a week. And that was garbage. Well, you burned your trash. Everything you could. And I remember thinking as a very young child that this was, and I remember Mother saying that if we, his name, we would probably find it at the very end of the individual who is just trying to make a little money. And the only way he knows how.
Mm.
And it sounds, I mean, it doesn't even sound believable.
Come here. Anything, to be doing anything. And then finally, the government projects came in, and at first they were called community projects or something, and then finally the federal government got into it, and it was, and then the massive building programs started.
Well, right.
And but that was like 37, I guess.
It was when FDR was elected, mm-hmm. the WPA and the CCC and those kind of programs came mm-hmm. in, but before then, there wasn't anything like that, mm-hmm. and you just got
so
along as best you could.
So people just kind of hung in there. They really
They did. Mm-hmm. My father, he was quite young when he got married, and I remember that his salary was cut in half. There were months when he wasn't even paid a salary. I remember he worked 7 days a week, long, long hours, no vacation ever. And we did what we could to help my grandparents. My grandfather had been a driller in the oil fields. He had tried to drill wells on his own. And you always hear about the ones that struck it rich.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was the one that
there were
never got well. So he worked as a driller. And there was no work to be found, so we helped him. And I remember my family. They had a large family, and we tried to help them. And, you know, you just did what you could, and
mm-hmm.
nobody had anything.
Hmm. And do you remember businesses folding and being boarded up?
No, as a child, I don't remember that. I just remember no one had anything. And Mother was always saying that, you know, you have to be proud. Don't be ashamed of the fact that you don't have this or you don't have that. You must be proud. And I can remember I went to Franklin Elementary School at one point, and I lived on fourth place. And I lived on a 1212 South Allegheny. It seemed like we moved every time the rent was raised. I mean, you know, $5 or $2.50 a month was an incredible amount. We were trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And at Franklin Elementary School, there was a family that lived in an abandoned car behind a billboard that went to school. There were two children. They had no shoes, and it was fall, like October, November, it was chilly. And they didn't eat lunch. And I was giving my lunch to them, and I didn't want to say anything to Mother, because you realize food was scarce, you know, and even though parents didn't say it was scarce, you didn't want to make an issue of it.
Mm-hmm.
But Mother, I don't know, I would come home from school so hungry, and Mother finally got it out of me, and I wasn't eating lunch. So she started packing more sandwiches for these children.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a coal mine not too far from Franklin Elementary. Now that is it. On 11th Street, just east of Yale, up in Yale.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Mexican community out there. There had been a strip mine somewhere, and the people worked, a lot of the Mexicans worked the mines, strip mines in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to our school, and they had what we call the 7-year itch. I was given instructions never to have anything to do with these children, but they fascinated me because they were Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand English. And one of the girls' name was Catalina. And I thought that was the most interesting name. I think I was in the first or second grade. And they didn't have clothes. And I remember they slept with their dogs. And I suppose they probably had fleas too.
Okay. How many years were you?
Well, this was up until World War II started. Things started easing up a little bit before World War II because we were getting into the war. We were supplying Europe. But not really until World War II. And the bomber plant, Douglas Aircraft, which everybody calls the bomber plant, opened. And when it opened, it provided a lot of jobs. And I worked out there one summer while I was a student at TU. And then I think I took a semester off and worked out there. And it was an interesting place to work. With all geared up for the war.
Mm-hmm. Where was that at?
It was for it's like the Key of America.
Ah, okay.
That has been going on.
I know that Will Rogers and Webster Hall were built at that time, and they were built with the
Rogers administration. Oh, I didn't realize that.
And so, according to the older architects, that relieved some of their problems a little bit, that time period in there. Because it had been fairly grim for them.
Yes, I remember, Jim Curran made this remark, that it was very hard for an architect during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived in Okmulgee, and that was where Wade Phillips lived at the time. And Leon Center designed a number of the buildings in Okmulgee.
Yes.
And in fact, they are doing something about the buildings, trying to preserve them, and his name also. They want to give him recognition. And Wade Phillips persuaded him to come to Tulsa, according to Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt, I think he felt it was a mistake, because at that time the Depression hit,
mm-hmm.
and there was no work. But he either designed the Phil K or the Phil Tower. I don't remember which one.
I
Phil, one of the two buildings was his.
Yeah, you know, I think I've got it, and again, Jeff probably talked to
him. One of those buildings there is a brochure that I picked up from the art fair, and it's in historical museum files. It was a brochure sent out to prospective tenants. It's a very interesting brochure that you might want to get to borrow and perhaps Xerox it.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the floor plans they had.
Oh my
plans
goodness.
For an indoor shopping center on the mezzanine. I think this was, I'm pretty sure this was the Phil Cade. And I think that Leon Center must have designed the other building. I don't believe he designed the building he was in. But Jim Perriman can tell you all this information. Now he was not. I'm going to take her back into the bedroom.
Oh, she's not following. I was wondering when the Depression really began to hit Tulsa, if it was a delayed reaction after the larger cities back east.
Well, according, you know, I was a child, and I can remember when it happened, when the banks closed, because most people didn't have any money. And I think my father had very little cash. You know, you couldn't write a check.
Well, did the banks close or fold?
No, they closed.
All of them?
Yes, President Roosevelt declared a bank holiday.
Oh, you mean one day or just...
And this was across the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it was more than just a day. Mm-hmm. There again, I'm not up on my history.
Mm-hmm.
But I know my husband said his dad had $20. And he really got along famously because that was a lot of cash to have at that time.
Wow. The general date that I... here, overall, for the Depression really hitting Tulsa was around 32. That's when things got pretty grim here. But I don't know why then, as compared to 31, 30, or even September 29, I would not think it would hit for 21.
But they say that the economy of Tulsa was not affected as badly as most other cities because we had an oil economy.
Mm-hmm. And yet I read the price per barrel, and it just plummeted, so I would think it would have affected.
But I'm sure that the employees in the oil companies received wage cuts.
Mm-hmm.
They had to have. But they still kept their jobs, and just keeping a job was something, because you could keep food on the table, and that was what the people were concerned about, was food on the table.
Yeah, so you wouldn't have had the gloves and unemployment.
No, we did have it, and I remember a lot of my